Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the NBA Podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and we have a great episode for you today. We're going to talk about the latest drama in New York, both their hiring and general manager, and the latest on the Melo to Rockets rumors. We're also going to talk about a bunch of the free agent signings that have happened over the past week or so. And then we're going to delve into some Summer League takeaways. As Vegas Summer League is wrapping up, Orlando and Utah are both in the books already. Before we get to all of that, just a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find all three of our Twitter handles, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so we'd love it if you subscribed, download, leave some reviews. Any feedback would be great. And we're being hosted this year on FanRag Sports, so check them out on Twitter at FanRag Sports and for their NBA content at FanRag NBA. Though Summer League is almost over, we've still had a lot of great coverage of that. We're going to keep monitoring the free agent signings that are trickling in. Derrick Rose still needs a job, for instance. And then we're going to delve into a lot of off-season preview coverage. We're going to figure out how all these new players and teams are going to look in the fall. So check out FanRag Sports at FanRag Sports on Twitter. Joining me today, as always, are my two trusty co-hosts, Morten Jensen and Sarah Chalea. How's it going, you two?
So much meat, Brian.
Yeah, Mort, tell everyone about your trip to Germany quickly.
Yeah, we took like a one-day trip to Germany to go to an amusement park called Hansa Park, which was great fun. Like, my son enjoyed it, and I enjoyed it as well, not because of all, you know, the activities. I barely tried any of them because I was too busy just going to town on all kinds of assorted meats. sausages and, you know, Wiener schnitzels and whatever, what have you, like steaks and roasts. And I'm not even sure I'm actually talking to you guys right now, or if this is all happening in my head. Not sure.
Just a fever dream from me.
Completely. So yeah. I might be extremely weirded out at some point. And if I start barfing, just know, you got a heads up, okay?
Yeah, the listeners appreciate that. Yeah. Sarah, Have you recovered from losing two of your favorites this week, Jonathan Simmons and Dwayne Dedman?
I'm hanging in there. I was kind of prepared, so. Although my mother this morning, she asked what we were going to talk about. I said, you know, some more free agent signings, summer league play. She's like, I wish he would decide. Unless he's going to decide no, and then I don't want to know. So I think we're waiting for that shoe to drop.
Yeah, that's fair. That is true. The Manu retirement watch is still on, much to Mort's delight.
No, he's gonna come back.
Let's hope.
Yeah, I've been kidding for a couple months now, but I have a feeling at this point in the summer, like, he's coming back. Right? He can't really prolong it for this amount of time and then go, oh, hey guys, I'm quitting. I don't think that would be proper.
I feel like maybe I should be more disturbed now that you've turned, because you were the one who told me Tim was coming back for sure.
Yeah, oh, that's right.
Like, now that I think of it.
So regardless of what I do, I'm actually trolling
you.
Regardless.
No matter what, yeah.
That sounds right. We will get into all the free agent stuff in a bit. Let's start with the Knicks, who they hired a new general manager on the good side. It sounds like they were negotiating with Dave Griffin, the former Cavs general manager. There was a breakdown in negotiations because he wanted more say over personnel. The Knicks wanted to keep Steve Mills, their president of basketball operations, among other people who have survived numerous front office changes in recent years. So in comes Scott Perry, who the Kings hired as their executive vice president of basketball operations 3 months ago. Prior to that, he was with Orlando for a while, did some good work there. He was there during like the height of the Dwight Howard era, so that was fun. And Perry, you know, this summer, he, like the Kings, we've all said, had a great offseason. And I think, you know, I don't think Vlade Divac woke up overnight and suddenly understood the salary cap. So a lot of the positive moves, you would think, were at least influenced heavily by Scott Perry. So, Mort, do you think he's up for the challenge in New York, given James Dolan, who we ranted about last week, and everything he's inheriting there?
Well, I think he's up for the challenge. The question is, like, even if, regardless of how motivated he is he going to get undermined? Is James Dolan going to stay out of his business? Is he going to let him do the day-to-day? One thing is what Dolan says, another is what he does, right? But yeah, I mean, look, this is very likely a hungry Scott Perry coming in to prove himself over a long-term period. So yeah, I definitely think he's up for it. Ask me in 12 months. The answer may not be the same.
Yeah, that is the fair take. And that is the question with Dolan, who it seems like he mostly let Phil Jackson do what Phil Jackson wanted to do, which was both good and bad. good in the sense that, you know, he let the basketball executive have control, but bad in the sense that he almost ran Kristaps Porzingis out of town. So we'll see how Scott does. But I think if he helped turn the Kings respectable in one summer, he's been around dysfunction, and dysfunction particularly in a front office, for a while now. So he's at least somewhat prepared for what he's inheriting here. Sarah, I want to ask you, so the Kings got, I think it was a 2019 second round pick and cash for Perry to let him become or go to New York. So do you think this was a mistake for them to let him go, or do you think it was a good move? You know, usually if a guy is applying for a job, a higher job, organizations are going to let him go. So it's right. Do you think that was their rationale, or do you think it was like, oh, he was just asking for too much money, too much power, we're scared of that, bye?
It seems like it was a good faith thing, which is always good to set that kind of standard across the league, I think, that you're going to do right by your employees. I just hope that they have a plan in the works, you know, because as everyone said, they did have a pretty good offseason. It seemed like he was helping turn them in a better direction, and now they're going to have to figure out where to go from here.
Yeah, yeah. It's, I mean, one would hope that they're going to hire another front office executive with some mm-hmm. sort of experience, because otherwise we've seen what happens when Vlade is on his own. Luckily, Sam Hinkie's not in the league right now, so no one's going to go after him like a bloodthirsty shark, but who knows?
Isaiah Thomas is probably available.
Well, hopefully, oh God, hopefully they go for someone a little better than Isaiah Thomas. Dave Griffin, it's amazing that he doesn't have a job right now. Any organization would be lucky to have that guy.
Well, hey, look, I get it. I mean, the guy wanted actually to have some sort of power in bringing in so competent people. Like, how dare he?
Right. That is not allowed in the NBA. We have apparently to stick not. With the incompetence we've been running for the last 15 years.
So let's just look at that. Let's just wrap that one up. So in Cleveland, you have Dan Gilbert offering a deal that's below what Chauncey Billups would earn as a player coming back into the league, signing a minimum deal. Mm-hmm. And in New York, you have Dolan, who is basically telling one of the five best general managers out there that he can't bring in his own people because Mills. Have I gotten that right?
Yep.
And at the same time as well, like, you might have a guy in Scott Perry who turned a very dysfunctional Kings franchise around, who now is, and they okayed him leaving to New York, mm-hmm. which is not, like, in their best interest at all.
Right.
Wow, like, my point about poor ownerships, that's just, like, enhanced over the last week.
Yeah, it really has. I mean, I do think, as Sarah said, it was a good faith move for the Kings to let him interview, you know, a step up in title from executive vice president of basketball operations to GM. Usually if a guy's applying for a lateral move, that's when organizations step in and say, no, you can't interview this guy. But if it's a promotion, it's, I right. mean, it's kind of a dick move not to let the guy go. So I think that was the Kings' rationale. You know, the compensation they got in return is not overwhelming, but I, you know, that's fine. I don't think anyone was expecting the Knicks to give up, like, Kristaps for with this general manager. So, yeah, I mean, I understand why the Kings did it. I hope they bring in someone experienced alongside Vlade again. Because they have, like, the Kings we talked about a lot this summer. Like, they have a lot of good young players. They really could dig out of the mess they've been in for the last 10 or 15 years if they play their cards right moving forward. But I had a lot more confidence in that front office a week ago when Scott Perry was there. And now if it's just a Vlade run show, I'm a little nervous. But
well, that could be fun. You like to see, you know, teams blow things up, so why not?
I do. I mean, I'm not mad. I enjoyed the Vlade era. It, you know, it helped the Sixers get Markelle Fultz, so please, by all means, let him continue running the team. But for the sake of Kings fans, who are very loyal and dedicated despite all of the crap they've been through over the past decade, I hope they do not let Vlade solo run the show. Let's go back to the Knicks, though, because the other big talk on the town is this Carmelo Anthony trade. It sounded like Frank Izzola of the New York Daily News has been all over this story all week. He had a report earlier in the week that the deal was on the two-yard line, reportedly a four-team deal. We don't know who the other two teams are. Then they hire Scott Perry, and Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN says, well, suddenly they're pulling back on this trade. They want to see if Carmelo is willing to stay. You know, I think it's basically Perry just like making, he inherited a new job. He wants to check on everything before he goes back into the trade well. But Ben Izzola has a report out Friday that basically says the Knicks pulling out at this point, like the other teams involved are pissed. Carmelo is pissed because he thinks he's definitely going to Houston. So it sounds like at some point Carmelo Anthony is going to be a Houston Rocket. We just don't know when or who the other teams are. So Moira, I'm going to ask you first. If you're Houston and you're trading for Melo, what's the most you're willing to give up for him?
Well, I'm not interested in trading for him if I'm Houston. Let's just start right there. I mean,
so you,
I'm
you
I'm
would looking, not at all?
No, not well, not at all. I'm waiting for March, like March 1st, for for the free agency pickups, like after they've been bought out. So the deadline for signing guys up. so late February. I mean, I'm looking to get him and Dwayne Wade in there on minimum deals after they've been bought out. I'm not looking into trading anything. Like, Ariza right now is, like, the perfect complementary guy to put alongside James Harden and Chris Paul. So moving him out of the way, including a hell of a lot of different assets, like also Ryan Anderson for Melo, I wouldn't give that up right now. I think they need, you know, Paul and Harden, they need those complimentary guys who can knock down three-point shots, and especially Risa, who's a two-way player. Like, if Melo comes on the cheap, then by all means, but how can you really facilitate a trade? Like, okay, we don't know who the other two teams are, but you would have to give up something drastically to make the finances work if you're Houston, so that means Ryan Anderson at least, right?
Right. Yeah, it sounds like the stumbling block is the Knicks want to build around 25 and younger players, according to Woj, like guys on Kristaps' timeline. So they have no interest in Ryan Anderson, who's got three years and about $61 million left on his team.
Right, he would be sent to one of the other two teams, obviously.
Yeah. And that does beg the question, what else Houston has to give up? They have about, I don't know how many guys are still non-guaranteed, but like when they were trading for Chris Paul, they like traded for all of those guys on non-guaranteed contracts. So they have a bunch of guys. I saw it earlier in the summer, it was $10 million. I don't know if it's still $10 million, but they have a bunch of guys on non-guaranteed contracts. So like, in theory, I'm sure they would happily include Sean Long in any trade. I don't think they envision Sean Long as part of their future. So I think that is part of the sweetener, just for teams that are looking for a little bit of cap relief. They would trade those guys. But yeah, I mean, it begs the question, like, who else do you have to include to get off of Ryan Anderson's deal? That is a fair question.
Yeah. So probably I still think like it's going to happen after the deadline. I don't think Melo gets moved. I think it's extremely difficult to move him. And if you have like Scott Perry coming in, as you said, like surveying everything, it's going to take a while before he makes a drastic call. I don't think he's going to come in and just, like, right off the bat trade one of the most recognizable sports stars in New York.
Hey, man, the Magic inherited the Lakers and then sent Lou Williams out, like, the next day.
That's true, but he wasn't the most recognizable athlete out there. I mean, this is Melo, after all. Like, that's a big name. It's there's a lot of PR stuff, like, connected to him. And if it's a new GM coming in, like, immediately sending the face of the franchise the other way around. I know that's supposedly Kristaps, but not to the general audience quite yet.
Yeah. I mean, I think at this point, I would be shocked if, I mean, maybe casual Knicks fans still want Melo around, but it seems like most hardcore Knicks fans realize, A, the team's going nowhere with Melo, B, the team has just done Melo so wrong that they want him to leave, like, for his own good. Similarly to how you felt about Jimmy Butler in Chicago. It was like they have the free Melo campaign, basically. So I don't think fans would be that upset. I could be wrong. I could be totally misreading this. And maybe casual fans are, like how casual fans are mad when the Sixers traded Michael Carter-Williams.
Casual fans are wonderful. Yeah.
I feel like people who really hardcore follow the team would understand it. Sarah, if the Rockets do get Carmelo, obviously they are even more of a threat to the Spurs, the Warriors, the Thunder, the Wolves, all the teams out west that are going to be competing for a championship. How do you like the fit conceptually of Carmelo Anthony on the Rockets?
You know, I admire and appreciate that they're out there trying to make these big moves. But I somewhat wonder if, I mean, they seem to think they can just add whoever in this Maury D'Antoni style is just going to fit for everybody. And I'm not entirely sure. I know that everybody's banking on Olympic Melo showing up, and it's not like he can't play that style, but it's just weird that they are, you know, theoretically looking to add these two players who operate quite a bit in the areas of the floor that they like to pretend are like lava, you know, like in the middle, but not in the paint, not a three. It's interesting to me. And as a Spurs enthusiast who, you know, we added a player who likes to take those kind of long twos and who likes to get the ball a lot and slow down the offense. And he doesn't seem thrilled about not being the number one guy getting the ball. So I just wonder about the wisdom in that choice. But at the same time, I think, you know, I can understand if we can get a player like that, we should try. But I just don't know. I don't know that that's the best idea, especially, like Mort said, to trade to get him. If they can pick him up later, sure, without having to give anybody else up, but I just don't know. I mean, we've already talked about the fit between Harden and Chris Paul. I think that's enough to try to integrate for 1 year. Melo might be a bit more than they want to deal with it in 1 year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and as you mentioned, I mean, the D'Antoni system, they didn't run it like as they are in Houston, in New York, but Melo and D'Antoni have worked together, and that did not work out super well last time. It sounds like both sides are open to it again. Steve Kyler, Basketball Insiders, among others, have been reporting that. So that doesn't seem to be a huge roadblock, but it is something to consider for sure. I mean, we just don't know. We already don't know how this new look Rockets team is going to look, as you suggested, Sarah. So yeah, it would be a hell of a lot of work for D'Antoni to implement two of those guys in 1 month of training camp in a shortened preseason, because we are, you know, we have fewer preseason games under this new CBA, which is great. Mort, who do you think the other teams might be that are involved here? I have a couple sleeper ideas, but I want to, like, we have no idea. No one has reported anything about these other two teams. So who do you think might make sense?
It's a good question. It's a really good question. I could imagine the Pacers being one, because they have, if I'm not mistaken, they have a significant amount of cap space, right?
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Yeah. Well, okay, they did take on Oladipo, though, so I'm not sure, but they should have some more, you know, they should have a fair bit of cap space. So they could take one of those big deals, like a Ryan Anderson type, and then if a pick is sent their way to make it worth their while, then maybe. But then again, Herb Simon isn't really inclined to go on the big rebuild. So I'm not sure, though. Who are your targets here?
So I might be totally off base here, but I feel like Utah would make sense for Ryan Anderson, especially because they have Derek Favors, who is on the last year of his deal. He seems best suited to play the five. He's not really a super great fit next to Rudy Gobert, so even if he stays in Utah this year, I feel like he's probably gone as a free agent in 2018, especially because after those top few free agents are off the market, I feel like he's in that next tier if he stays healthy this year. So if you can get off of like Alec Burks' contract and you can send favors to New York, who could be interesting next to Kristaps and Alec Burks, I don't know, to the fourth team, whoever that might be. That could be interesting. Phoenix, maybe, because they've just been going after, like, every big name power forward free agent. Like, they went after Paul Millsap and Blake Griffin. So I guess, you know, if they want more shooting in their starting lineup, or if they could have Ryan Anderson come off the bench behind Marquise Chris and Dragan Bender, that maybe. And they just have a bunch of cap space. So they've, you know, they've already said, like, we're willing to take on bad deals. You just have to send picks or young players our way. And then Brooklyn is just, like, you know, the salary dumping capital of the world. If you have a bad contract, send it to us. You just need to put something enticing in return. And I feel like, you know, as we have talked about it before, Brooklyn has no incentive to tank this year. They don't have their first round pick. So Ryan Anderson would make them better. Again, I don't know what else they would get, or like what they would give up in exchange, like maybe Trevor Booker or something like that. It's hard to say. Utah is the only one I feel really passionate about. Yeah. I just think, like, Anderson next to Gobert would be really interesting.
Oh, that'd be good. Like, that would be downright good. And it's a good point about Brooklyn. I'd actually not... I had more or less just taken the Nets off my entire plan here, because I was thinking that they were going to go after Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. Mm-hmm. And then he signed with the Lakers. But when these rumors started rising, that was before KCP signed with the Lakers. So I figured, oh yeah, you know, they are KCP bound. But turns out they weren't. So they could easily, they actually should be like the favorites to be one of those two teams.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Nerlens Noel is like the only free agent worth a damn still out there, right? The only one that's like, that you would spend the big money offer sheet on.
Yeah. It's coming, though, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know from, you know, the market's drying up quickly. Like, I don't think the money he expected is coming. Because I forget who reported someone, I want to say, like, Mike Fisher or someone, reported they were offering him in the neighborhood of, like, $18 to $20 million a year, which seems like pretty fair value given what we know about the market. And he doesn't, he's hoping to get something bigger, but, like, cap space, even for the teams that have it, is really drying up. Like, I don't know what team is out there that needs a center and is offering a max deal.
Maybe qualifying offer, if it goes all that right. I mean, if you don't have a team out there willing to give up an offer sheet, like, you might be inclined to take the QU.
That's really risky for a guy with Nerlens' injury history, though. Torn ACL already. Definitely. And his knee has just been kind of, even after he came to Dallas last year, they rested him a lot down the stretch, blaming the knee.
I wasn't saying it would be smart. I was just saying, like, greed can take you so far.
Yeah. It is. I mean, it's definitely an option, but I have a feeling Dallas and Nerlens will eventually come to terms. But Brooklyn, that is the one place that they could still lob a big offer sheet his way, and we've seen Sean Marks do that in the past. I'm glad you mentioned KCP, though, Mort, because that's a good way to segue into our free agent signings that we haven't touched on since we last recorded last Saturday. KCP is the big one. 1 year, $18 million to the Lakers after, you know, he came into free agency. We all thought he was getting a max deal. We thought that would be a tough decision for Detroit. Detroit instead trades for Avery Bradley, rescinds KCP's qualifying offer, and says, go on, young man. We don't want you here. More, do you like the fit of KCP on the Lakers, and do you like it for that price?
Yeah. I mean, look, I was not one of those guys who were completely giddy about KCP. I thought he was too inconsistent an offensive player to warrant, like, a full max. And I also didn't want him to, you know, get in the early to mid-20s each and every year for a four-year period, because I just don't think he's worth that much until he's become more consistent on both ends. But as a defender, and in terms of his age and the offensive potential, which is there, then I love this deal, especially considering it's a one-year deal. Again, we've spoken about this at length, to the point that Sarah is probably rolling her eyes right now, like, oh my god, they're going to say it there one more time, aren't they? Yes, we are, Sarah. We're going to say it one more time. Contract length doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Or, sorry, contract value doesn't matter. Contract length is what matters.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, the $18 million, it is what it is. It's fine. You know, it's a good value, don't get me wrong, but it doesn't matter. It's the 1 year that I absolutely love. They keep themselves competitive for next summer. It's like financially competitive. And they can renounce him if they want and if they need be. So,
yeah.
Also, Jordan Clarkson is going to get one hell of a competition at the shooting guard spot this training camp. Like, he is not a strong defender. KCP is, and I would imagine that defense is going to be a big item going into next season.
Oh yeah, I'm assuming KCP starts. Yep. I feel like Jordan Clarkson is better suited to play a combo guard role off the bench. KCP, inconsistent, streaky shooter. He did hit, I think, a career high 35% from three last year. The big thing is Lonzo Ball is going to be a huge beneficiary of having KCP on the floor, because KCP is going to defend the best. The best option in the backcourt. You're going to have a lot of cross matching, I'm sure. Like, KCP is going to be the guy defending Chris Paul, Russell Westbrook, all the top point guards.
And the other way around as well, because, you know, Ball will get the, you know, Ball will get the ball to Caldwell Pope. I mean, he will get better looks from playing alongside Lonzo Ball. Like, his last point guard was Reggie Jackson. I mean, he's not a passer. He's not a playmaker. He's a scorer. So, it's going to be a completely different KCP this year, I think.
Yeah, and it's for the Lakers, it makes total sense, because as you mentioned, Mort, it still keeps them flexible heading into free agency. We've talked about a lot in the past how their grand plan is Paul George and LeBron James. Worth noting, KCP is represented by Clutch Sports Group. LeBron James is, I don't know if it's his agency, but it might as well be. So,
plot thickens.
Yeah, saving Rich Paul a little face with KCP. Yeah, it's a little suspicious. It just adds to the smoke behind the LeBron to LA rumors, so we'll keep an eye out there. But also, it's a good plan B for the Lakers, right? So even, if Paul George, let's say OKC, wins the title this year, and Paul George is like, oh no, I love it here, I'm going to stay. And LeBron's like, no, I don't want to go to the Lakers if Paul George's not going. Now they have Brooke Lopez and KCP as, good plan B if they strike out in free agency next year. And that's still, that's an intriguing team. Lonzo, KCP, Brandon Ingram, I guess Julius Randle, maybe, if you keep him around, and then Brooke Lopez. Like, if the rest of the West didn't get so much freaking better, the Lakers would be, competitive with that starting five. Like, they're going to be a better team than they were last year. Like, substantially better, I would argue. It's just that the rest of the West also is going to be substantially better. So they might not move up very much in the standings, but they're going to be a better basketball team than they were last year.
Let me ask you guys something. The Lakers right now, as currently constructed, are they better than the New Orleans Pelicans?
Sarah, I want you to take that one.
I mean, top to bottom, potentially. But those Pelicans are pretty top heavy. So that's a tough one. Plus, it just depends on fit, We got to see still if the Pelicans mesh at all with this two-headed monster they've got.
Yeah.
It hasn't really happened yet. But I would say there's potentially an argument there.
Right. And that's really the crux of the matter, right? Like, just the fact that there's an argument to be made means that the Lakers are definitely moving in the right direction.
For sure.
Yeah, you could probably make the same argument about Dallas, too, right?
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah, I don't think the Lakers are going to be nearly as bad as they were last year, and it selfishly, it makes me happy because, the Sixers traded that Lakers/Kings pick as part of the Markelle Fultz deal, and I feel like both of those picks lost at least some value this summer. I'd be interested to see if Boston would take that same amount now that they did a month ago. But maybe, because they think Jason Tatum is the next Paul Pierce. Sarah, let's go to Indiana, because your boy Corey Joseph is heading there. I think it was originally reported as a sign and trade. Now I don't think it's actually a sign and trade, but basically Corey Joseph heading to Indiana for, the rights to some guy who's probably never coming over. CJ Miles to the Raptors on a 3-year, $25 million deal. So, Sarah, they brought in Darren Collison already. They brought in Victor Oladipo. They waived Monta Ellis. They still have Lance Stephenson. And now Corey Joseph is there. How do you see Corey fitting into that backcourt?
You know, I think it was a pretty good move for both teams. But I'm disappointed for Corey. Because, A, I know he liked playing back at home in Canada. But it's also just the Pacers are not moving in a great direction. right. So, I mean, Corey's going to fit fine. Honestly, I almost feel like they should just start him, but, you know, I'm a little biased, just a little. But, I mean, he'll fit fine. He's going to give them things that they need in that guard spot, especially if Darren Collison has trouble being consistent. But Corey's kind of always, and we'll see if he takes another step, but he's always been solid. Like, he hasn't been exceptional at certain things, but he doesn't turn the ball over. You know, he shoots pretty well. He takes care of the ball, gets other people decent looks. But he's, you know, not super creative. But he's going to be fine, and it's a good move for them, which they honestly needed. they need to make a few more, but they're also, as we've all admitted, kind of on that, what does it matter? I mean, I think they've said that they wanted to make the playoffs last year. Hopefully they're not super concerned with that this year, but it's an interesting spot they're in.
Yeah, I can't believe, Kevin Pritchard the other week was saying, like, that's why we had better offers for Paul George at the deadline, but we didn't trade him because we want to make the playoffs. Like, this is why the East is where the East is right now. You have owners like that. But yeah, I mean, if they, you know, it was originally reported as a sign and trade, so I'm almost like treating it mentally that way. And if like CJ Miles was going to leave anyway, getting Corey Joseph in return is great. He's a player option in 2018-19, so he might only be there for a year, but you turn nothing into something, so whatever, that's fine. And he's a flippable asset down the line if you need to. I would like it more if I had any faith in Indiana's front office, but given Pritchard's comments, I don't. I just feel like they're now too bad or too good to be like awful. They're probably going to be like their ceiling is the 10th seed in the East. Like that, I don't see any way that team makes the playoffs, but they're not going to be bad enough to tank into a good pick. So for Indiana's sake, I hope next year's draft is really deep. Mort, we were all over CJ Miles heading into free agency. How do you like him on the Raptors?
Well, before I answer that one, I'm just going to slightly disagree with Sarah on one point, which is Sarah felt bad for Corey Joseph ended up in Indiana. And I think he's going to love it because he's going to break out.
That's the perfect
place for him to break out. Like, who else is there to really take over everything? Corey is a really, really intelligent basketball player. He makes tremendous reads on the court. He, like Sarah said as well, you know, he doesn't turn the ball over. He is just crafty. He's an improving shooter. He's a floor general. I have a feeling that he is going to blow up this year. Like, it's not to like an all-star level, but, you know, 16 points, 7 assists, something in that area. And on solid percentages, and moreover, like, strong defense, leadership capabilities. Like, he's really going to prove that he is, you know, belongs as a starting, full-time starting caliber point guard in the NBA. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what he can do. I think this trade is actually one that he should have hoped for beforehand, because he was always going to play behind Kyle Lowry in Toronto. This frees him. And to answer the CJ Miles question, I love it. I love CJ Miles in Toronto. That's the guy they needed. They need a zone breaker. They needed one who could just hoist up like a billion three-point shots over the course of a game and hit a strong percentage of them. He's a spot-up shooter, plays off the ball a lot. He's also somewhat sneaky athletic, so there are times when he just fakes you out of your shoes and he goes to the rim. I think he's going to pack a punch in that second unit, which they really needed, honestly. He's not going to have ball handling responsibilities. He's not going to be asked to defend this and that guy. He's going to come in and have a clear role, which is shoot the damn ball, which he can. And for that price as well, I'm kind of digging it.
Yeah. And I should note that deal came, I think, the night or the morning after Toronto sent Damari Carroll to Brooklyn, along with a lottery-protected 2018 first-round pick and a 2018 second-rounder. Brooklyn, in exchange, sent Justin Hamilton, who the Raptors immediately waived. So the Raptors did that as a cost-cutting move. They wanted to avoid the luxury tax. How do you like that move for Brooklyn, Mort? Do you think that was enough to take on the $30 million left on Damari Carroll's contract?
I was kind of surprised it was lottery-protected. I thought it would be, like, maybe top eight protected. That would have made more sense. But, I mean, look, that's probably the best they could have gotten. And a second rounder in today's day and age is nothing to just wimp at. That's actually pretty good. That's something you can get value out of. So then, and they needed draft picks, generally speaking. So I'm okay with it. It's a lot of money. But as you said about 10 minutes ago, Brooklyn is going nowhere. In you know, they can't tank because they don't have original draft picks. So they might as well try to win. And Carroll is a veteran, so he's going to help on the infrastructure. He's going to help out defensively. He might even play a lot of four where he can stretch a little bit. That might even unlock him a little bit more. Like, he was, you know, the fifth option, I want to say, on Toronto. This bumps him up a little bit. So that should improve Brooklyn as well. So they get a player and they get a couple of picks. I mean, I don't love it financially speaking, but what's the alternative?
Right. Yeah, I mean, getting off of Justin Hamilton's deal is pretty good because he was god-awful. And Damari, I mean, Kenny Atkinson, their head coach, was with Damari in Atlanta when Damari had his breakout year. So, you know, there's hope that he can tap back into that if Damari can get over the injuries that kind of plagued him in Toronto these last 2 years. Like you, I mean, yeah, I would have loved an unprotected first instead, but, like, the Raptors, I mean, we've all talked about how bad the East is this year. The Raptors aren't going to miss the playoffs, so it's not going to be... Even if Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan both went down, I feel like they still have enough firepower to make the playoffs.
Free Jonas.
So yeah, I don't think that's going to come into play. I mean, I don't mind it. I just, it's, again, it's like Sean Marks is doing everything in his power to speed up the first part of their rebuild, which is really just like get us through this part where we don't have picks, and then we can actually have picks and start, you know, then we can start actually getting young players of our own added to the pipeline. But for now, it's like that's what you should do with your salary. Don't sign guys who aren't going to make a difference anyway. Like, take bad contracts, get picks. Still compete. Still hopefully not give Boston the number one pick for the second straight year. But yeah, I loved it. I love it. Sean Marks, he's just doing one of the best low-key rebuilding jobs across the league.
He's pseudo-hinkying it right now.
Yeah, without the picks.
That's
the problem. But other than that, he really is. I mean, yeah, letting Yogi Ferrell go last year was kind of a blow. But, like, he's done more good than bad since taking over that job. And the Nets are in a far better position than I would have expected, you know, 18 months ago.
Yeah. And no GM is perfect. Like, that's so important. Like, I think fan bases are really hard on general managers.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's understandable that a general manager makes a mistake every once in a while. That's okay as long as he doesn't double down and consistently do it, Gar Forman. But if you're a team that is on the upswing and you need like this executive to just go out and get shit done, and he does more good than bad, then that's what you really have to focus on. Like, instead of just putting all those mistakes under a microscope, it helps no one, and it just puts your franchise back even more if the fan pressure forces an ownership to change executive, and even if someone worse comes in. Like, you can even look at it in New York. Like, Dolan just panicked and got Phil Jackson. How did that go?
Not super well.
Not super well. Not super well.
Yeah, I mean, hell, Sam Hinkie drafted Jahlil Okafor, so no one is perfect.
Right, exactly. Like, perfect example. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, let's go to the Magic, Sarah, who stole your boy Jonathan Simmons on a 3-year, $20 million deal, strangely after the Spurs rescinded Simmons' qualifying offer. So the Pistons did that to KCP after they got Avery Bradley. The Spurs did not do that to Simmons after they got Rudy Gay. They waited a couple days and then did it. So it seems like they were just too far apart on the terms. But then I was surprised that 3-year, $20 million was enough. So what do you think of A, Simmons in Orlando, and B, the Spurs letting him walk for that price?
Yeah, I don't know if stole is the word. I think the Spurs basically gave him up. I don't know what happened, but it seems pretty clear that both sides were just ready to not continue the relationship, I suppose. It's interesting, but I, you know, as much as I enjoyed Jonathan's time here, I don't think it's a big blow. He did really improve over his two seasons, but it's not like, you know, they lost something irreplaceable. They ended up picking up with Brandon Paul, I believe. Mm-hmm. Yep. That move kind of came right on the heels of deciding to let John go. So, honestly, I feel like, you know, I haven't done a lot of homework on him yet. Seems like he's a little bit more polished with the ball. He pulls up for three a lot. You know, honestly, I'm good with it. I was ready to see Patty walk, so I'm okay with Jonathan walking, you know? But it's interesting, and I wish him well. He's going to be down there with Chad now, Magic assistant coach, so I feel like hopefully that will help him to continue to develop, and $20 million is some good money for him, so I'm happy for him and his family.
Yeah, and hell, if it prevents the Magic from playing Aaron Gordon at the three, it's right. A win for everyone. So, yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean, I feel like it does not bode super well for Mario Hezonja, who is now probably third on their small forward depth chart behind.
Oh, you know, someone should go get him. Like, right? If you are an executive listening to this, one, I know, I'm not sure why you would, but if you are listening to this, go get Mario Hezonja, like right now. I don't care. Just go get him, because you're going to get him for cheap.
The Sixers and the Magic should just agree to trade draft busts from that class and just swap Okafor for Hezonja.
I don't think Hezonja's a bust, though.
Yeah, well, I mean, right.
Like, current bust? Right, yeah.
But I mean, Okafor might not be a bust in the right situation. It's just, that's not Philadelphia.
Yeah. By the way, like, you know how you think of a good tweet like 24 hours too late?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I regret to the fullest extent that I did not put out a tweet when the Spurs renounced Simmons, going, that's what happens when you don't pay your $150 entry fee. I mean, come on. What the hell? I know that they were, like Sarah said, were willing to like move on and go get someone else, and they were trying to do something else, but I love the energy that Simmons brought. Like, his athleticism and his uncompromised ability to just take it to the rack and not give a damn about his own body, I think that carries a lot, especially in the playoffs. Like, I think teams legitimately get a little bit scared of a player like that. They back off a little bit more. They are less inclined to be aggressive towards him. So I hope that... Oh, what's that guy's name? Paul? What was it?
Brandon.
Brandon Paul? There we go. Yes. Yeah. Honestly, I barely remember him. I know I saw something about him in Illinois back in the day, but not a whole lot. Like, I hope he has that edge. I hope that he comes in and has a similar energetic, athletic edge that he just puts on the Spurs, because I thought that they were better when Simmons was out there. I don't know if I'm putting too much into it, though.
I think he's hungry. I don't know that he's that type of explosive athlete. John was definitely special in that way. I think that's why Spurs fans, by and large, are upset. Like, if we have somebody who's really athletic, we're like, whoa, what is that? Like, people freak out. And then now that we've lost him, they're demoralized. It's going to be okay, guys. Just hang in there.
That's great. It's after 20 years with Tim Duncan, like, just someone who can just, you know, separate the court from his feet. That's just amazing. Like, what? Yeah. You jump? Like, what? What's his vertical? 25-inch. Oh, my God, yeah.
What a freak athlete.
Yeah.
Speaking of younger and more athletic, Jamal Crawford is going to the Timberwolves on a two-year, $8.9 million deal. Mort, I know you like that fit. Tell us why.
I'm just dancing my I told you so dance. Yeah. No, it just makes too much sense not to. And I don't know if you saw those comments he made the other day. I really loved it. Like he was saying he could have gone to the Cavs, he could have gone to the Dubs, and he could have gotten a ring. But like then what? Like is that special? He thought it would be more special to go to a team and take him from point A to point B. That would be, mm-hmm. you know, more exciting to him. I really respect that kind of mentality, and that's to his credit. Crawford has always been like that. And he saw an opportunity. Like he saw that they were legitimate. They got Jimmy. They signed Taj. Those were the two moves that he looked at and like, okay, they're taking on bets. They're not just going the full youth route. They're actually trying to build something here. So, and I'm gonna play. So I'm 50 anyway. So I'm gonna jump on board.
Right. It
makes a whole lot of sense. They needed a guy who could shoot. They needed someone coming off the bench who could just get buckets and. Lord knows Crawford can still do that even at his age, and I wouldn't even be surprised if he banged out like 150 triples next year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they really needed 3-point shooting, mm-hmm. ideally in their starting lineup. But hell, off the bench will work. Anywhere will help.
Right. Like you just take Jeff Teague out of the lineup after the first 6-7 minutes, and then you run Jimmy at the point and Crawford off the off the ball. And then you just stagger a minute so it makes sense.
Yeah, and Tibbs loves using veterans at the expense of rookies, so Crawford probably knows he's getting, high 20s minutes per game. So he's not just going to be a token signing there. Like, he's going to still play a big role, whereas I guess probably in Cleveland or Golden State, he would have been more of a 15 minutes, 20 minutes off the bench.
Yeah, he would have had, like, a Darren Williams role.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Golden State, I mean, if he went to Cleveland, Golden State would have annihilated him in the finals. Just ruthlessly targeted him like they did to Darren Williams. So, yeah, I don't blame him. That's fine. I would, the whole, like, I'm not chasing a ring thing, like, ask David West if that ring means nothing. Like, that's okay.
No, I don't think he said it meant nothing. It was just, like, he said, of course it was going to be important. It was just, the journey in itself was very rewarding, and I can get that. I totally see that. I mean, I get that logic, but I agree. Like, David West is looking at that ring until the day that he dies and just goes, screw that, man. I got this.
Right.
I get it.
I think he said, that it was more interesting to him to take a team from point A to point B rather than feeling like you know how it's going to go. You know you're going to end up in the finals at the very least. Was not as interesting to him.
Exactly. So Crawford has always been like a I'm not gonna say weird guy, because that sounds so negative, because he's always been slightly alternative in like where he signs and what he thinks is interesting in terms of like team building and whatnot. So this just makes perfect sense for him to go mm-hmm. there. We'll see how it goes, but I'm really digging that Wolves roster.
Yeah, they're gonna be fun. It's again, if the West wasn't so crazy strong, I would feel like very confident putting them in as like a top 4 or 5 seed. But the West is so crazy strong, so there is a wide range of outcomes.
They're for how this so team close to the Eastern Conference. I'm just saying, you should just make the switch. Just dear Adam Silver, just for this year, just move them to the East, and then some random team.
The Bulls
below
to the West.
Why not? Sure, I'm in.
Bulls are going to suck either way. Doesn't matter.
And if they're in the West, it's going to be even worse. So why not? And they used to play in the West, by the way.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
So, yeah.
All right, Sarah, let's go back into the Spurs. Well, another guy they lost, Dwayne Dedmon, 2 years, $14 million to Atlanta. Can you describe what Atlanta's getting with Dedmon?
What they're getting? Dedmon is a good role guy. He used to be critiqued for not having very good hands. I thought, for the most part, his hands were actually pretty good last year. The ball bounced off it maybe a couple times, but mainly he's going to be there. He's a great guy to relieve pressure with lobs, pretty good rim protector, shot blocker, and that's kind of it. He wasn't, I think sometimes the problems that the Spurs had was lineups with him in there, didn't space the floor too well, especially considering the rest of our roster construction. But, honestly, is it fair for me to say cheaper, less polished, but really not that much less Dwight Howard. Less headaches.
I think that's actually pretty fair, especially where Dwight is today. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, not prime Dwight Howard, obviously.
Obvious deal.
Right. But yeah, and I think, you know, it's a good fit for Dwayne to be there with Bud, and they're in a system that's not too far off of what the Spurs do, so it's a great move.
Yeah, and I mean, the Hawks front court, we've talked about in episodes past, is pretty ravaged. You know, they lost Millsap, they lost Howard. It's like, now they have Deadman, John Collins, they brought back Mike Muscala, they got Diamond Stone from the Clippers and the Jamal Crawford deal, but it's like, we have no freaking clue who's going to start in that front court come October. So it's a good opportunity for Deadman, if nothing else, to be a starting center, probably. One other former Spur who found a home this week, Aron Baynes, went to the Celtics on a one-year $4.3 million deal, presumably the room exception. So, Sarah, do you like the fit of Baynes there?
I do. You know, they've had front court issues, so helps to kind of try to bolster that a little bit. He's not an overwhelming rebounder. I think he's averaged somewhere between 4 and 5 the last few years at about 15 minutes a game, but he can do that. He is size. He's not a great shot blocker or anything, but he's a decent rim protector, honestly. He kind of gets in the way well, is the way I'll describe it. And he has a decent like mid-range shot, so yeah, and he's also, the thing that I enjoyed about him most in his time as a Spur was he's just good at pissing other people off. Like he used to piss Dwight Howard off so much, and it was really fun to watch. So, you know, if you have a big guy that's really giving you hell, throw Aron out there, and he'll at least make it interesting.
It'll be good depth behind Al Horford and nothing else, because they lost Kelly Olynyk. I don't think Tyler Zeller is signed yet, but they're presumably going to lose him as well. So their front court depth kind of had to take a hit when they got Gordon Hayward.
Yeah, I think they renounced Zeller, right?
Yeah, they had to. I mean, he could still re-sign there for like the minimum or whatever. No, but yeah,
he's probably not going to be an NBA player next year. You think?
That's probably. Yeah, I mean, roster spots are filling up quickly.
Well, that, and he's just not. Let's be honest, he's not very good.
Right. There's that minor detail as well.
I'm sorry, but like his defense is atrocious. Really atrocious. Like not even close to NBA caliber.
Yeah. Okay. Last big stuff in the signing front before we go to Summer League. Utah stayed busy, and they're the wake of losing Gordon Hayward. They signed Thabo Sefolosha, 2 years, $10.5 million. Jonas Jerebko, 2 years, $8.2 million, and Ekpe Udoh, who has not been in the league for a hot second now. Former lottery pick in 2010, I believe. They got him for 2 years, $6.5 million. They also waived Boris Diaw before his contract became guaranteed for this upcoming season. What do you think of these three moves for Utah?
Love it. Adding a lot of veterans to a otherwise young team. You're getting guys who are at least I'm not going to say strong cards on defense, but they have, because they're getting older, so they don't move as well as they used to, but great defensive understanding, at least in Thabo and Udoh as well. He played the last 2 years for Fenerbahce, so and he proved worthy there. Jerebko is just, yeah, he's a solid wing slash big who can, you know, play spot minutes at both forward spots. He's not a great defender by any stretch of the imagination, but he tries hard. He can hit the long ball. So, and it's mostly the age. Like, Jerebko and Udoh are 30, I want to say, both, and Sefolosha is 33. So them coming in and tutoring Rodney Hood, Donovan Mitchell, those guys, you know, that's going to be huge. So it's not a Gordon Hayward replacement, but it's a combined effort to survive, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, their defense is going to be absurd this year.
Yeah.
I don't think we can definitively pencil the Jazz out of the playoffs even without Gordon Hayward, because I really admire how they've reloaded, and I don't see any way they don't have a top five defense this year.
I agree.
Okay, so let's go into Summer League. Let's start with, we're going to bring back the My Crush segment, which we have not had since the regular season. So let's start with our Summer League crushes, and then we can go into some of the other guys who have impressed and disappointed. So Sarah, who's your Summer League crush so far?
You know what's crazy? I've gone a little bit too enthusiastic about Summer League. Like, I've had 3 or 4 different people that I want to pick for my crush, which is kind of ridiculous. But obviously there's Bryn Forbes, who, I'll be honest, I did not expect that much from him. I kept thinking of him as someone who, and it still may be true, but as someone who wasn't in the Spurs' future plans. But he's sticking around, and he's making a heck of an argument for them to keep him on board. He's leading Vegas Summer League, I believe, right now in scoring at 29 points per game. He had 35 two games in a row. He's really improved his off-the-dribble game. And I was joking the other day about not only is he better off the dribble, but he's kind of mastered the art of screaming through contact while driving to get the and one. So very, very happy for him. He looks really comfortable, not only just pulling up, but taking it to the basket, even making some nice passes. So happy for Bryn. Also want to shout out Jordan Bell, who I'll probably never stop talking about. He had a 5x5 the other day, which was ridiculous. He's to the point where, you know, because the Warriors, you know, needed so many more good players. They've got at least 2 guys on their Summer League team, Pat McCaw as well, who have played so well that they're like, never mind, you don't have to play anymore. just go sit on ice for a little bit. And I wanted to shout out Dylan Ennis, who went off yesterday, I think it was, for 35 points, hit 8 threes. It's just, yeah, freaking Warriors, man.
Thank you, Bulls, for selling him for $3.5 million. Hope you use that money wisely.
New printers, Brian. You can never put a... Oh, yeah, you can.
Mark Deeks did point out they could have used that money on Rondo, and I think, who was the other one? Isaiah Cannon may have had a little bit of guaranteed money.
So, $3.2 million owed for those, so that's covered, good. And then they have $300,000 left for printers.
For new printers, good. Good for them. All right, Bulls. All right, Mort, just go ahead. Go for your Donovan Mitchell rant.
I don't have a rant, Brian. I'm just calmly telling you that Donovan Mitchell is having one hell of a summer league. You know, yeah. 37 points in a game, 8 steals, is consistently just tearing teams up. And that's why, like I've said for a while, which is why I'm consistently so calm about this, is why he's going to win Rookie of the Year. Nice and easy.
We should note that Mort did have him as the 3rd best player in this year's draft class heading into the draft. Mm-hmm. I, along with many of the draft experts that we had on, called him crazy. early returns seem to be in his camp rather than ours. But yeah, Mitchell is, I mean, it's just, he's unreal. If that shot is as pure as it's been looking in Summer League, he's going to be a freak. And I mean,
he's so good. Like, yeah. The defense is there already. Yeah. The shot, off the dribble game is going to come, probably not this year, the next year. He's going to be one of those complete players.
Yeah, the defense gives him a high floor, no matter how the offensive game shakes out, even if he doesn't turn into like 20-25 point per game scorer, that defensive versatility alone is going to keep him in the league for 10 plus years. So I would love to know what the Nuggets were thinking trading him once he was still on the board, why they were like, yeah, we'll take Trey Lyles and Tyler Lydon for him. That was already looks like a horrendous deal. But yeah, Donovan's been doing well. Do you have any other guys who have caught your eye, Mort?
Well, De'Aaron Fox, who was number 2 on my draft board, I think he's done very well. Leading a team, he's had a surprising outing in terms of shooting the basketball. It's not been like a whole bunch of long range, but like he's had some pretty nice looking high arc shot from the mid range off the pull ups, which has been like, oh, you can do that as well. That's intriguing. And then Antonio Blakeney for the Bulls. He actually got signed to a 2-year, 2-way contract. I think he's the first so far who's been signed to a 2-year, 2-way contract, which is the most that you can sign for the 2-way. But he's, I was looking at him coming in when he was listed on the Bulls, Summer League roster. he was like the one guy who stood out to me because he's still just 20, coming up from LSU, had a pretty good last season. He is a freak athletically. Like, he has a vertical leap of 44, and he's speedy. He can really, really get up high. And then he's an improving jump shooter. Mm-hmm. So I was thinking, you know, what do the Bulls need? They need youth. They need athleticism. Gar Foreman pretty much said that. And then they need shooting, because, good Lord, they need shooting. And he sort of checked all three boxes. So it made sense. And then he came out in summer league and just delivered, making the right call all the way through for the Bulls. So good on him.
They actually got younger and more athletic for once.
I was very surprised that they signed him to that two-way contract, because it was the right thing to do. I was sitting, you know, in the passenger seat of a car, and we almost crashed because I was just, the Bulls did something right. Very, very weird.
Stunning. Yeah. All right. So my crush, Homer pick, is Jonah Bolden, who I just didn't know all that much about heading into summer league, and he's consistently impressed me. He's an athletic monster already. He's blocking shots left and right, also showing off some 3-point range. I don't think it's an exaggeration to say he's already a better fit for the Sixers roster than Jahlil Okafor. He makes me feel better about if the Sixers eventually have to trade Rashawn Holmes. Like, he could be a backup big behind Embiid, behind Simmons, Saric, etc. So I really like him. Jonathan Sharks of The Ringer, he and Kevin O'Connor did a redraft, at the end of summer league redraft, and they said it's obviously super premature to do this, but Sharks had Bolden 13th overall in the redraft. So I don't know if that's actually 13th? How it would go. What? 13th, yeah. 13th?
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if that's actually how it would go, but the fact that he showed out this much at Summer League is at least encouraging. It seems like the Sixers are going to have him play abroad for 1 year just because they don't have the roster spots, but
right.
I look forward to seeing him in a Sixers uniform in the future. Dennis Smith Jr., I mean, if you're looking for a dark horse, I don't even think it's a dark horse pick for Rookie of the Year. If you're just looking for a not Fultz, Lonzo Ball, Ben Simmons pick, like, that's the dude you need to put all of your money on, because the Mavericks are going to turn the ball to him right away. He's going to put up monster numbers as a rookie. He's really good. He got into the perfect fit. Assuming Nerlens re-signs there, he and Nerlens in the pick and roll is going to be absurd. Him picking and popping with Dirk Nowitzki is going to be fun. Wesley Matthews, Harrison Barnes, like, the Mavericks are going to be... I don't think they're going to make the playoffs, but they're, like, that's the crazy thing about the West, is, like, even the Mavericks are probably, like, a 6th seed in the East, and I don't know if they're even, you know, it might be, like, the 12th seed in the West, but I really like what I'm seeing from DSJ. I feel like if you had to redraft, I don't know if he sneaks into the top 6, because I feel like all the top 6 prospects are really good. But the Bulls should absolutely be killing themselves that they took Markkanen over him at 7. I know you got Chris Dunn as part of the Jimmy Butler return, but don't let that cloud your judgment. Like, Dennis Smith Jr. is better than Chris Dunn already. So that don't say, oh, we got Chris Dunn, he's our point guard of the future. You got like 5 point guards of the future in the last 12 months. They all suck. So, like, you had a chance to actually get a good one and you blew it.
Yeah. Oh, there are two guys. Donovan Mitchell and Dennis Smith Jr. Those are the two guys that I'm looking at and going, yep, the Bulls are going to regret that.
Yep.
Like, a lot. And just hear me out on this one. If they had kept 16th, they could have moved up, and they probably could have gotten Mitchell. So they could have gotten, realistically, Dennis Smith with the 7th pick, and had they kept 16 in the trade, because I think that was doable, trade up for Donovan Mitchell.
Yeah. Or take, like, John Collins is another guy. He went 19 to Atlanta. Yeah, he's been playing really well. I think he's going to, you know, I said it earlier, we don't know what Atlanta's front court's going to look like, but I think he's going to be a legitimate factor in there.
Yeah. I had him high as well prior to the draft, but James Hollis, he fought me on it, but I've been a John Collins fan for a while. Really. Yeah. He's really, really good, and I'm glad to see that he at least did well in summer league. And just to remind people once again, summer league means jack shit.
Right. Right.
But still, like, it's still better to look good than bad.
Yeah, exactly. The one other guy, Jason Tatum, I mean, everything I thought about him pre-draft, he's kind of just validated. Like, he's an incredible shot maker. He, you know, especially contested shots. Like, he's got that Carmelo Anthony-esque ability to really just hit tough shots. And, you know, that impresses a lot of his fellow NBA players. The defensive concerns are still there for me a little bit. And I don't know, you know, he hasn't shown that much of his passing chops yet. So, like, I don't know if he turns into, if he's Carmelo, if he turns into a Paul Pierce. Either way, like, it's still a really good player. I think Boston is not going to be upset that they took him. But this basically my biggest takeaway from Summer League is that, like, A, the top of this draft class is loaded. And B, aside from, you know, Donovan Mitchell showed a little bit more than I expected. John Collins, too. But, like, it basically just validated a lot of the pre-draft strengths and weaknesses of each prospect. Right? Like, Markelle Fultz, well, first of all, shout out to Markelle Fultz for not breaking his ankle. Because, holy shit, was it a dark day in this household last Saturday when I was watching that game. My wife had an overnight shift at the hospital, so she's working, like, and I immediately text her. I'm like, I think Markelle Fultz just died. And then I try to send her a video of the footage of his sprain, and obviously she didn't respond because she was actually saving people's lives for good reason. But then, you know, immediately that night, Ramona Shelburne reported it was a high ankle sprain, turned out to be a lateral ankle sprain. Seems like he's going to be fine, but whew, that was a fun scare in July with another Sixers prospect going down. But before he went down, I mean, he showed the ability to create shots off the dribble. The spin move that he has is fantastic already. You know, he got the praise from Kevin Durant for the Hezzy pull-up Jimbo, which is awesome. But yeah, I mean, there's still defensive concerns about him. He had, like, I mean, anyone taking a lot out of plus minus in Summer League really needs to rethink their lives. But, like, he did have a minus somewhere in the minus, like, 30, high 30s, low 40s over his three games. So how much of that is a concern, I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, look at the
Sixers. It's Summer League.
Right. Look at who he's playing alongside, and then, like, put him next to J.J. Redick, Robert Covington, Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid. I'm not that worried. Right. But that's there. Well, I want to go into Lonzo Ball a little bit here, because Lonzo Ball has had two triple-doubles. He also had, like, 36 points, 11 assists, 8 rebounds, something like that against the Sixers. Mm. Suddenly, you know, he was 2 of 15 in his first game. We made fun of him a bit last week for that. But now he's showed out really well in his following couple games. Now everyone thinks he's the greatest thing since sliced bread. He's the second coming of Magic Johnson, mixed with LeBron James, mixed with Michael Jordan. Mort, are you buying the Lonzo Ball hype?
Well, I'm buying the hype that is justified. Like, I had him as my fifth-ranked guy coming into the draft. And so that's not, like, a low ranking at all. No. Like, I mean, that's the top five of the draft, and I'm sticking to that one. Like, he justified that. Whether he's going to be better than that or not remains to be seen, but he definitely had a very nice outing, or a lot of nice outings, really. So I'm not on the whole sliced bread thing. I'm also not a fan of sliced bread. I think it's overrated. So.
Oh, my God. Hot takes everywhere.
Hot takes everywhere.
Oh, my God.
But, I mean, look, I'm reminded of, it's Avengers Age of Ultron, the opening scene. The Avengers are fighting in the forest, and at some point a bunch of soldiers are lining up against Thor and Captain America. Thor says, "Oh, look, they're lining up." And Captain America goes, "Yeah, they're excited," and then they just murder them, basically. That's kind of where I'm at here with Lonzo Ball, like, and Lakers fans, because they're excited. They're excited. They have a brand new toy. He's doing well. Makes sense. Like, I can't fault Lakers fans for liking something that looks good right now, especially after so many years with inept management and the Kobe farewell tour and everything that just gone wrong. So, you know, good on you, Lakers fans. Enjoy it. Enjoy it. And I hope for your sake that he carries it over to the regular season.
Yeah, I think that's where we're at. If anyone who's looked good in Summer League, that's great. But, like, let's reserve judgment until we see whether Lonzo can get that shot off against an actual NBA defender rather than a guy who's going to be playing in Europe next year.
Yeah, and I mean, the same is true for players who are bad. Like, look, Kevin Durant, Derrick Rose, they look like crap at certain points in their respective opening summer leagues. I mean, it makes no difference. It's just to get some reps in. And, you know, for the most part, it's fine because you actually get to play some NBA sort of caliber talents. So you look at yourself and go, okay, maybe I shouldn't have done that. Maybe I should do this instead. Then the next game you experience something different. Like, okay, if I go to the right here, they'll rotate this way. So I actually have to pivot the other way. It's a learning curve. It's totally understandable.
Yeah. If anything, I would be alarmed if a guy got progressively worse through the week. Like, if he shows something new every game, that's a great sign, right? And I feel like that happened with Fultz, that happened with Ball, that's happened with Tatum and some of the other guys, Dennis Smith Jr. especially, Donovan Mitchell.
Bam Adebayo, by the way.
Yeah, Bam Adebayo. Yep.
He was good, too.
He was good. So, yeah, I mean, I feel like it just confirmed that, you know, we heading into the draft, we thought this was a really strong class. From what we've seen so far, it still looks like a really strong class. Hopefully all these guys pan out. The NBA is better when you have a huge wave of talent coming in and each team is getting better. That said, Sarah, do you have any disappointments from Summer League? Anyone you've been expecting more from that you are feeling left wanting?
I don't want to say he's a disappointment, but I was a little underwhelmed so far by what DeJounte Murray's done.
Mm.
He's only played 39 minutes in Vegas so far, but he's got 9 turnovers, 6 assists. So that's not great. Obviously, that's a simplistic way of looking at it. But so far, we've seen a lot of what we saw last year in the spots that he got to play, sort of flashes of brilliance, craftiness, driving to the rim. I did see him running the team well at certain times, so I was excited about that. Honestly, that's more what we needed to look for from him. Can he slow down and kind of create for others? Because if he's going to be the primary ball handler at any point next year, especially in Tony's stead, then that's what they're going to ask him for the most. Like, just take care of the ball. He's still a little loose with the ball at times, so that's a little bit of a concern. And I think he said that he's added like 15 pounds of muscle or something already. But he still gets overwhelmed. He's still a small frame guy. So a lot of times people just knock him off of his spot easily. So we'll be watching him. But I'm still encouraged, still hopeful.
He was sitting next to LeBron during that Lakers-Sixers game. So he's clearly recruiting LeBron to the Spurs next year already.
He loves Pop. Makes sense.
Yep. Mort, any disappointments on your end?
I don't know. I mean, whenever I watch Cameron Payne handle the basketball, I got the Benny Hill soundtrack playing in my head. It was really bad. I mean, but expectedly bad because Cameron Payne is bad. He's really bad.
Mm-hmm.
So to that extent, not disappointed, just kind of disappointed that my worst fears came true as I expected them to.
Right.
No, I guess sticking with the Bulls theme, Denzel Valentine looked like hot garbage for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't guard anyone, couldn't really get into the teeth of the defense. He just looked awful. And it seems like he's really not bound to be that type of player we all thought he was going to be coming into the NBA, which was like a on the ball playmaker who could pull up three and just make all kinds of crazy razzle dazzle plays. Seems like he's going to be very limited when handling the ball. And he's going to be more of a spot up shooter.
Did you see the clip of him shoving his teammate?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I did. Yeah, but you know, again, that's fully expected. I mean, it's the Bulls, Brian. You really? I mean, I'm not expecting professionalism on any level.
Yeah, it was him like shoving his teammate into defensive position because his teammate was kind of just like lofting on the perimeter, had no idea what was going on, and Denzel was just like, "What are you doing? Go!" And his teammate almost fell on his face.
The irony in Denzel Valentine, of all people, being pissed off at someone being out of position defensively was great fun. Yeah. That was terrific, because that happened to him, like, oh, I don't know, 70, 75 times a game last season. So
right.
Even if he only played 5 seconds, somehow it still ended up in that total. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a fun one. Yeah, I'd say the Bulls, just as a whole, are the clear disappointments from summer league.
I'm at this point where I'm just saying, next year, to me, there are like 29 teams in the NBA.
Yeah, I mean, God, if we thought the Bulls were unwatchable last year.
Yeah, exactly. Like, everyone is going to love Jimmy Butler now.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. The only reason the Bulls are going to be fun next year is when they hold Dwayne Wade hostage for the first 4 months.
Because mm-hmm.
the buyout talk has already started, but they have shown no inclination to let him free. So that's literally the only reason to watch the Bulls next year, just to see how checked out Dwayne Wade is.
No, I mean, yeah, you know, like, we have League Pass Alert.
Yeah.
We should have, like, a reverse League Pass Alert. Like, if the Bulls are about to finish a game shooting under 20% from the field, then we need to tune in, and everyone on Twitter just needs to root the hell for the Bulls shooting under 20% from the field for a game. It just needs to happen. Yeah.
D-Wade's troll move should be to win a bunch of games for the Bulls, because they are clearly trying to tank and be really bad. So he should, he should just try it as hard as he can. Like, oh, we're down 5?
I would love that.
I'm gonna single-handedly take over, not let any of your guys, your young kids, get minutes or, like, experience taking late-game shots. I'm gonna do everything. I'm gonna win these games. Screw your draft pick. Buy me out.
Dude, I would love that. I would absolutely love to see that, just because I want more drama now. Before, I was all checked out on the drama. I was just tired of it. Now I just want more. I just want to see these Bulls get as dysfunctional as humanly possible, just for fun. Just see where the line is drawn.
They're on their way there. Sarah, any other major summer league takeaways for you?
I wanted to mention Kyle Kuzma, because I think he's looked pretty good, shooting like 38.5% from three, showing signs of potentially being a good stretch four. And just staying with the Lakers, like, the thing that I really enjoy about a player like Lonzo Ball, well, for one, it's refreshing to see a guard who doesn't feel the need to, like, walk the ball up and control it all the way into this half-court offense. Like, he wants to get the ball up. He's throwing these outlet passes, touchdown passes. So I appreciate that. But also just the way that, you know, when other players are playing with a guy that they know is going to find them and he's going to make the extra pass, like, It's so contagious, and it's really fun to watch it take over a team. Like, just the whole Lakers summer league team has made the extra pass numerous times in the few games that I've watched, which is really fun. And I'm just excited going into next year about the fact that we possibly have, like, three really great passers coming into the league, playing in the league, actually for the first time. So you got Ball, you got Simmons, and then Teodosic is coming back, so I'm excited about that. I think I'm a nerd for passing anyway, but I just, maybe I'm biased because we're living in the age of the Warriors, but I think that great passers don't come along quite as often as great shooters even, so I'm excited about that.
The Lakers summer league team has really been, they've been a lot of fun, and I hope Ball turns out to be really good. Zubac just seems to be having the time of his life out there. Like, he's so happy. Those outlet passes are something else. Ball is a really fun player. I'll give him that. So I hope he does well. The controversy over which shoes he's wearing every night has been fun. Like, I want him to continue not wearing his overpriced $500 shoes and see what LeVar has to say about that eventually. Mort, do you have any other final summer league takeaways?
I never want to hear anything about Lonzo Ball's shoe again.
Oh, no. Well, you might need to disconnect from the internet.
I know. I'm so ready for all this sideshow just to be over. Like, not just with Ball, but with every minor thing, because right now we're in that part of the season, or, you know, the summer, where every story is just getting published, even though it's so ridiculously small, and it has no effect on anything. So I'm just like old man Morton sitting there going, I don't want to hear about anyone's shoes. God damn it.
Yeah. That's fair.
But yeah, but what I'm looking forward to is seeing what happens with Neuron's Noel, honestly, mm-hmm. which has nothing to do with Summer League, but just as a summer as a whole. I'm really pondering what the hell is going on right now there. So we'll see.
Yeah, I feel like he's definitely going to end up back in Dallas. It's just for how much and how long will be
there. Right.
That is definitely the question. You reminded me, Sarah, that I need to unfurl a Ben Simmons point guard rant, but I'm going to save that for next time.
Okay.
Oh, by the way, point guards, can we all agree that Derrick Rose is going to end up in China?
No, I think he's going back to the Knicks.
I want to see Derrick Rose in China. Just averaging 45 points.
Someone's going to get desperate. Someone will sign him. I mean, the Knicks don't want to start Nikola Kina, right?
I don't know. It depends. We don't even know what the kind of direction they're going. They just got a new GM. That's Everything true. Is up in the air.
Well, that now they just got a new GM, so they're going to be like, oh, wait, we shouldn't take in a guard who is good only because he's in the triangle, and then fire the guy who wants to run the triangle. Maybe that was a huge mistake.
Yeah, they're going to slide into Dennis Smith Jr.'s DMs at any point.
Yeah, they really are.
Hey, remember us? We sort of didn't pick you, but...
Our bad.
You know, I slid left. I probably should have slid right on the app, but... Yeah.
Derrick Rose is not going to China yet, but Justin Hamilton reportedly just agreed to sign with the Beijing Ducks. So you got that going for you, at least, Mort.
Oh, we're on our way.
Yeah. All right. So, yeah, I will save my Ben Simmons rant for next time. We will also continue covering free agent stuff, and then we'll just talk about some random NBA topics, including we'll touch on the pace of play changes the NBA made as well. So until next time, be sure to check us out on Twitter at the NBA Pod. Remember, you can find all of our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some reviews. We would love any and all feedback. And find us on FanRag Sports, so at FanRag Sports on Twitter, and for their NBA content at FanRag NBA. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morton Jensen and Sarah Chalea. Have a good one, you two.
You too.
You too, Brian.